something that, you know, the secretary and the division you've talked about for a while, as you've heard through public comment, whether you agree or not, MNET's clearly one of the most controversial fishing gears in North Carolina. And although MNET fishing effort is down significantly over the last two decades, this gear continues to be the subject of different debate and opinion concerning its impact on our fisheries. There's a lot of conflict. We've all heard, and I'm sure you've all seen, there's many calls about it. The Division of Marine Fisheries regulates and enforces the use of this gear through your rules, through proclamations, and through fisher management plans. They are spread throughout the rule book. You can't go to one place and find a representative on the defense. We receive more calls and more emails over limits than any other gear or program that the Division administers or enforces in every way, including shelters leases, and that's translated. We hear from advocates on this, and we hear from opponents. We hear we are overly restrictive, and we hear we are not restrictive enough, but that we should man the gear outcome. As this figure indicates, that we have up here, and I think you have it on your iPad as well. Does everybody have that? So, as this figure sort of demonstrates, and this is just for Pamlico, Moose River, and out to the Pamlico Sound, the gillnet regulations are complex, they're numerous, like I mentioned, they're found throughout the NFC rules, and numerous proclamations. And so, this complexity is not something that happened overnight, and it's a result of decades of actions by numerous marine fishery commissions, by department, by division, by federal agencies. There's a lot of swings going on here. The regulations have become difficult to understand by stakeholders. Sometimes they're difficult to understand by marine fishery staff, and enforcement can be a challenge. So given the history and the complexity of these issues, the Secretary of the Department of Environmental Quality and Recreation has directed me and the division to conduct a thorough review, sort of a deep dive, what is currently in place, what works, what doesn't, to streamline regulation and eliminate complexity. This review would need to simplify, to reduce bycatch, and to ensure the sustainability of our stocks important to recreational and commercial fishing. He's also expressed interest regarding near-term actions to limit yardage, particularly in the smallmesh fishery, and to address hotspot attendance requirements. And there are areas that I think we've heard in some of the public comments that tend to be sort of hotspot areas that where we don't have attendance past that November. So as a proactive and fair way forward in conjunction with the Secretary's direction, EMF will be initiating a two-phased approach with respect to that issue. The first is to begin a review of existing Marine Fishery Commission small mesh, which is less than 4 inches, gillnet rules and proclamations to identify potential amendments with respect to minimum mesh size, total yardage, and attendance requirements. And that's, you know, we'll look at your rules so you can actually, you know, indicate what else you would like us to look at there. The second thing we would like to do is issue a proclamation this spring to limit yardage for smallmesh nets with reasonable outer limits so that we can cap that smallmesh, because outside of Albemarle Sound, there really aren't yardage restrictions in the small fish fishery. Based on analysis of the average, minimum, and maximum yardage is currently used, and we are evaluating that now. And that would sort of put a cap on it, on that yardage, while we evaluate all of the potential management strategies at the division. And so, rulemaking, as you just saw, under the Administrative Procedure Act, it provides a methodical approach. It has a requirement for basing rule on sound scientific, technical, and economic information. Several options are available to use this approach. Standalone rulemaking is the first option. We can develop issue papers. We don't have to bring this all at once, in other words. We can develop issue papers with options for your consideration. And I'll go over a timeline here in a minute. Second, rules can be adopted through FMPs, and most of our current board ULAB regulations and proclamations were developed under that category. And finally, the Fishery Reform Act provides an avenue for FMPs to be based on years, but we've never ventured down that road, and I don't really know what that would look like. So placing a reasonable yard limit on yardage in the short term, I believe, is a prudent measure. The conservation value of such an approach is really based on the amount of yardage and the type of fishery it is, whether it's sort of bait versus sort of a higher value fishery. But any yardage limits would address variable conditions of biological impacts and bycatch issues where none of them currently exist or is unclear, and like I said, some of the proclamations are not clear. While it may constrain some trips, it may also help provide for longer fishing seasons for quota management species. So the time it takes for rulemaking, even outside of an FMP, as you've seen, is considerable. And part of this is due to the requirements of the Administrative Procedure Act. Part of it is due to the meeting frequency of this commission. Part of it is due to the staff that we have available to do such things. We have one economist. Oh, nice of it. And part of this is due to just the complexity of these rules. This is not a strike through one line simple issue that we're looking at here. We do anticipate the fiscal analysis and legislative review of the regulatory crimes requirement may be significant, which will put it in front of the General Assembly. And we also expect that there's an objection. As far as the timeline, issue paper development will begin as soon as we can. I expect to begin that after this meeting. And be presented at least some of these options. Issues presented to the NFC to select preferred options in November of this year. And then the time to draft the fiscal analysis and any proposed changes sort of depends on the complexity of that, but we would anticipate May 2021 for you to approve notice of text. So in November, you would kind of select preferred options to move forward with public comment and go through that. And then the rules become effective, subject to legislative review sometime, probably early 2022. As far as the shorter term, we plan on issuing proclamations for that small mass yardage in March of this year to allow that fishermen to get ready for fishing season in the spring. So, that's kind of my pitch, and I'll take any questions that you have. I have
questions or comments, or if there's anything there, just review, which is going to kind of come back to us, but I guess it's white paper, issue paper, that y'all might have looked at and considered. It's just a good
need a motion from us to endorse the moving forward, or is there any need action-wise from the commission?
If the commission would like to endorse this process, I think that would be appropriate. Certainly. Let's hold and look at the council. Let's continue the discussion. Is this all that the commission wants to take a look at? Is there anything special anybody here wants to look at in this process? Now's the time to speak up on that. Second.
You mentioned you never developed an F&B for a year. What would be kind of the pluses and minuses of doing something like that? I feel like that might be a good way to get a lot of diverse stakeholders looking at something like this. It seems like a really good option.
As we talked about this, as far as the public input side of it, and you know the APA moon making actually has a public input component, but that doesn't mean we can't, as a commission, say we would like you to send this to a standing advisory committee or have a mission discovery meetings. We certainly would recommend that. With a gear FNP, we would have a more upfront approach on scoping of it. At the end of the day, the time would probably be a little longer, just depending on how to put together if we did it like a standard FNP with an appointed advisory committee, that might be an approach. I'm thinking that might take a little longer because we typically those try to wrap everything up before we bring it to you. But we don't necessarily have to. We could do sort of a truncated one and bring you a little bit of thing that I'm a little leery of with the gear FMP is when we do FMPs, a lot of times the management actions that are adopted in the FMPs are implemented by proclamation given the variability of the existing rule. Does that make sense? So proclamation doesn't require that fiscal analysis very hard. And so this is the most used commercial gear we have, and it is going to have a significant anything we do, whether it be increased mesh size, increased yardage, or do any of that, in rule will have significant economic impact. And I feel that it's important to be able to address that. Now, you can go through an FMP or through a gear FMP, and you can just say, we don't want this implemented by proclamation necessarily. We want some of these things to be ruled so that we can do that. And I don't want to throw a proclamation out, because proclamation is the flexibility that really gives us the ability to manage more efficiently than what's both allowing gear and restricting. I think we really got to look into what an FMP, a gear FMP is and what it looks like, and kind of get underneath the skin of that thing a little bit before we do it. I mean, it's certainly an option.
I really to see how complex this is. Being a government official myself, it's very difficult to make, to just understand what's going on. And there's so many different scenarios that people kind of deal with throughout the state. I just like to see it kind of get out to a broader group of people. And I don't know if the FNP, it sounds like, may not be the best way, but a focus group of some sort that we could put together with stakeholders would be better than us, you know, kind of discussing it more limited viewpoints up here.
And just remember, this is just a starting site. We need to look at this, and here's some key points on the way we consider. This months, if not year-long process, hopefully there will be things that are really quick on that. But input is definitely needed and appreciated.
I'm not so concerned about how long it takes, because it's such a simple
comments or problems.
Is this the right time to voice our opinions on things that need to be looked at?
Sure, if you want to make some suggestions for us, direct staff to make a look into bring the position back to the federal design.
Yeah. So if we're looking at the sharing of the links to these events, I think we're looking at a couple of things as well. For a person to witness,
Sam's for now. Right. Thank you. I don't think it's plugged in.
So yeah, I would definitely look at
not everybody's blinking.
The scare packets of flush and fish in my density doesn't seem right.
I don't know.
And
I don't
it is when you're running your vision and that
I'm scared for the mutant. Just like the scary because I don't know why Scott is
kind of late.
There might be a reason.
Sitting in my spot, it's a conflict. And we've had these discussions. This is more of a conflict issue I'm dealing with, and there are some bad apples on both sides. I'm not going to say there aren't, because there are bad apples on both sides. But it's a conflict issue and not a resource issue. Because if you look at the resource numbers, I mean, from the last 5 years, from 2013 to 2018, you know, you're looking at the number of fish caught by the recreational side versus the commercial side, and you're looking at the dead discharge. The dead discharge in the fisheries have gone anywhere from 390,000 to 1.5 million on the recreational side. And the commercial side tops out at 24,000. So you can sit there and argue that it's they're catching all the fish, or stop you from catching your fish. The numbers don't say that. They're just not there. Now, if you come forth and tell what you don't like that net being an efficient spot, I'll go along with that. But don't come forth preaching that it's hurting the resource, hurting the spawning and everything else, because the commercial side is not taking the predominant part of the fish. You can sit there and say it is all you want, it's not. You're the big elephant in the room now, we've had these discussions. I mean, if we want to go on a resource-based argument, what do we do? Look at cutting the grill limit back down to 2 and put the slot on the top for those of us that are catching fish? That's ridiculous too. The fish are there. The fish are safe. The fish are healthy. As long as we don't have a cold stun again, we'll be fine. But I think a lot of this gill net dialogue has got to go along with dialogue conflict as much as it does anything about resource. Because that's what it is. It's a conflict. You don't want to catch your fishing spots. And I don't blame you, I don't either, but I may not want all those boats in my fishing spot. So you've got to look at it on both sides and be fair. And I think that's what the director has to look at when we're looking at this, is basically the number, basically the science off the numbers, and then discussing conflict as a parameter in that decision-making process.
Mike, did you have something? Options, right? You can use
disclose one of them. But you also have to have for option A, option B, and usually what we do is status quo when we're not aware. So we'll develop those, and if the commission wishes to have some advisory capacity like that, or a committee like Commissioner Romano said, that's fine. But we wouldn't have one for each, area, each fishery, something like that. I think we would try to pick large scale items that we could develop issue papers on. Because otherwise we'd be doing this for
yeah, that's kind of what I'm trying to wrap my head around with the approach and how, because there's, having spent an intimate amount of time with my hands on a field net, you build a piece of gear specifically to say what a fishery that you're targeting, correct? And so the definition of small mess can be a very wide ranging thing, but terms of, I guess, the state definition is more of this size mesh and this size mesh, and that's fine. I mean, I don't have an issue with lumping, reindeer mesh sizes into something, calling it small mesh. But, just using it as an example, speckled trout, well, you're allowed 75 fish commercially, and you don't need 2,000 yards of small mesh to catch the 75 fish or whatever. However, you take a bait fishery like menhaden, and you restrict the yardage to the yardage that you might restrict to the speckled trout fishery, and you don't have a fishery anymore. Because you have a high volume, low price fish. It's very valuable fish because that fish will produce crabs like no other. How much outstanding crab they can shoot by, and that, economically, you're getting a lot out of your fish there to bring to crab pot and get crab that might be worth sometimes $3 or $4 a pound. But that's my issue, is that I'm just concerned that each fishery gets a fair shake here and a fair look at their gears. The Spanish fishery is another one. That's a very valuable commodity to North Carolina, both recreational and commercially. But, these boats are operating in areas that there's not a lot of conflict as far as, there's this big water, middle of the night, they fish at night, they're home during the day. There's a lot of different things that go on in these fisheries that I don't think a lot of people really understand. The times that these nets are set, how many nets are set per fishery? I think the closer to shore you get, the closer to the creeks you get, you run into John Boats, recreational guys, and here's another little skiff, 14, 16 foot skiff, wooden boat, a commercial guy, and they run into each other, and oh boy, watch out, that's, don't do anything that's on, that you don't want on a picture or a video. I've sat here time and time again listening to public comment after public comment of, if we just take the gill net side of the water, we'll have the most outstanding fishery in the world, and I just can't agree with that because I've caught a lot of fish with gill net year after year after year, and then when I go fishing again, the fish are still there. And only significant weather events like hurricanes or really cold winters or whatever that dictate fish patterns and mortalities or movement of fish has really impacted fisheries more so than gear types. So, that's my main concern, is that the fishermen that the honest fishermen, the guys who leave in during the day or during the night and make a trip with their gear, and they take observers like you heard, Mr. Newman
them a little peace, because I try my hardest to give peace to direct fishermen if they're using specific areas. For example, striped bass up in my area, if I lock favor, people start looking around for them, you know, and so by December or so, we're looking at using some smaller bass, and we had to be very conscious of these people and where they're fishing at, and we had to try to use the waterway, you know, to avoid conflict. And I'm sure you can ask the colonel over there. If you go to my area, we don't get many phone calls to the division about complaints, because all the guys, really try to stay out of the way of the recreation. Got, I think, the grumbling that we get up there, that you get from us up there, you can't allow us to do enough or give us enough bottom to do anything on. And we're frustrated because we want to get, and then we get fish as much as we can, because it's, each trip is worth it to us to get out there, and if we can catch 4,000 pounds, that's what we want. And that's kind of what our fishery turned into, is targeting their faces and targeting, what's available to us and switching away from the species that, have been listed as concerns and stuff like that, like the flounders, and we've tried to give some breaks to these fish up there, just comments. This day and time, it's extremely hard to be a gill netter. It's extremely hard to continue in this process, knowing that deep time to time again, we sit here and hear, the guys that come in here and say that, gill nets are the biggest eagle in the world to any fishery and this, that, and the other. To be a gill netter, to hear that and spend as much time as I have with my hands on a gill net, I just can't agree with that. But anyway, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the time.
Sure thing, Mike.
Just one other quick follow-up point. When you start talking about who's fishing where and who's got the right to the bottom and all that, you've got to consider the resource and economic value also, and where that product is going. The consumer has as much right to anything coming out of that water as we do use it. You can sit there and you can say, everybody doesn't have a $50,000 tidal or a boat they can go fishing on, or whatever the catcher fish. You've got a lot of people all over the state. They go to the fish markets and they want to get stuff for trout, and that's the only way they can get it. And the only way they're going to get that is when you're killing it. So everybody has rights to use these resources and the results of the products thereof. Everybody needs to keep it in mind.
Thank you, Tony. Is there anything else anybody would like to ask the division to answer this issue? If not, partner, do you have a motion that you would make?
Yes, I think that this discussion, as well as public comments, clearly indicates this is an issue requiring some further conversation. And there are some great points made by the commissioners today. I go out to the director to try to deal with all this and come to a conclusion that everyone's happy with. But with that, I move that the Marine Fisheries Commission endorse the division initiation of the rulemaking process for small management.
Second on that. Motion by Mark Posey, second by Governor Fury. Or taking a unilateral action from a fisheries standpoint. They've been done by legislative action, constitutional amendments, things like that. What I'm trying to do here is to have a controlled, open, fair, balanced process to look at all this so that I can put some of the noise aside and look and take a good look with stakeholder input and with anything else that the commission wants to look at and be fair in that process. And it is a long process to do. And it is sort of an overwhelming type of task to take on. And I'll tell you that I probably have people in my own staff that are like, oh my God, what the hell has he done now? So, but I think it is the right thing to do. As long as this is a legal year, we've got to get into this and we've got to address a lot of these issues that we hear about on a day-to-day basis in a fair way, looking at all the different stakeholders.
Let's see. Okay, there's a motion and a second. There's a motion that you make. Okay, right. Any other discussion on this? Now I'll do a show of hands. All in favor of the motion, raise your hand. All opposed? Passes unanimously. Before we take a short break, I just want to make a comment. As Greg Murphy mentioned, the Secretary has had an interest in this, had a lot of discussion on this issue too. The Deputy Secretary, the Director, and us, and all work for the governor, has had an interest on this for a long period of time, and we have his endorsement to take the reasonable approach to address that issue. He would like to see this issue addressed because there is so many tentacles out there about this. So we have support from bottom and top to address this issue, just so that everybody knows. Let's take a quick 10-minute break. I mean, real quick, our schedule's going along pretty good. I always have a couple.